Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined today by Eric Beinfort. We are coming at you guys right as the NFL draft is about to happen. Right now, when we're recording this, it's 8 days away. It should be 6 days away when you guys are hearing this. And the idea for this conversation is we're going to do a little bit of a portfolio review for Eric and I. Eric has his beautiful tools at Spike Week pulled up to monitor everyone that he has drafted thus far. See some of the positions that we're big overweight on, underweight on, and then maybe more importantly, forward-looking, how that's going to impact drafting and Best Ball Mania 5, some of the spots that we think might be soft as Best Ball Mania opens. Eric, man, how you doing today?
I am wonderful. The weather's getting nice. The NFL draft is coming. And we're talking about, this is my baby. You know what I mean? This is my thing that I particularly love around Best Ball. We all have player takes, right? We all have our rookies that we like. I enjoy that process like everybody else, but I find, especially like you said, at the beginning of like BBM, like going in with a little bit of a plan of some things that you want to attack and maybe some certain ways you want to construct your teams, it's like a gigantic edge. And like when you come from like where we came from with DFS and all that kind of stuff, like that's like the ante to the game in things like DFS, and it's kind of an advanced subject in the best ball world. So I really think it's a huge, huge edge and something I spend a lot of time thinking about.
So entering into, I've never maxed the pre-draft contest before. We did ADP chasing last year. So I hopped in the streets a little bit. I think I probably did 15, 20 entries or something. And then this summer I was like, you know what? We're doing ADP chasing. It's $1,500 to enter, to max enter the big board. You know, it's not even half an Ethereum to ship a big board. I might as well just do it. And I was also spurred on by Brian Hooper's analysis that found that I was one of like the 100 most nittiest drafters in all of Best Ball Mania 4. If I remember correctly, my average variation per selection was something like 7 spots off ADP. I was really just a sophisticated auto drafter in the end. So I was like, big board, perfect contest. I'm just going to take some giant stances. I'm going to have 20% of all the guys I like. I'm going to have 50% of some late round guys that I love. And I don't think I'm going to have the stones to do that intensely in Best Ball Mania 5. I mean, one, I don't want to get to week 14 and be the SpongeBob meme of Squidward inside watching Patrick and SpongeBob playing outside of like, I advanced 6 teams because I did 37% someone who just tore their ACL immediately or something. But I do think I plan on taking much more aggressive, overweight stances on guys I like, and not taking fallers. Like, I think the only guy I legit had zero of in the top 100 last year was Alexander Mattison. There might have been a couple of Nick Chubb, yeah. I think I also had zero of, but you know, even I don't know, a Najee Harris 16 spots after ADP, I might have clicked once or twice. And my goal this year is to do none of that. From a portfolio perspective, how do you approach that?
Yeah, it's pretty similar to what you just said, and it's evolved a lot over time, right? I was definitely the player take bro and take big stands guy when I first started and all this. It's been so long. About to have Best Ball Mania 5, which is hard to imagine. Crazy. I remember Best Ball Mania 1 and these takes that I had. But it's kind of a combination of what you said. And then I actually learned something totally not related to best ball, but I wrote about this a little bit this spring from Tony Robbins, for anybody that's big in like the motivational speech and investing space and stuff. But he talked on a podcast that I really like about, it's an investment strategy, but a lot of times these investment strategies can be a little bit applicable to how we handle our portfolios here. And he kind of talked about like having, you know, 8 to 12 like core assets. And that's what I would consider what you're talking about. Like, these are the guys that I just think the market is wrong about, or this idea, right? It could be like the Ravens offense. Like, that was one for me last year. I just think the market is wrong about the Ravens offense. Like, they are going to be amazing, right? We get the offensive coordinator shift. Lamar Jackson, to me, should be priced with Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts and all that, and he wasn't. And so taking those 8 to 12 kind of ideas and saying, all right, these are the things that are going to be kind of ultimately define my season. And, you know, I'm not, like you said, I'm not going to take 75% of them. That's not my personal approach, but they are going to be the foundation of my year. And then this is where like the tools and stuff that we built at Spike Weekers have become so big for me, is now I can massage my portfolio around those, right? Because what I found so much is, not only was I taking big stands, sometimes maybe even stands that I didn't want to take with individual players, there's a trickle down effect to like, well, now you have a bunch of the same players together as well, right? So you have two stands that you took, but then you have 5% of another guy. Cause like, it, maybe it's one of your examples, right? I'll take that guy when he falls 6, 7, 8, 10 spots, something like that. I don't dislike him, but I don't love him either. So I end up with 5 to 8% of that guy, but then you end up with none of him, even though you took say 50% of Sam Howell, right? Was my most notable guy last year, 50% Sam Howell. I still only have like two teams with Najee Harris and Sam Howell on them, even though maybe I don't hate Najee Harris. So I like to build kind of my core things where I do think that there is an edge on the player take and like team take side of things. It's the market is efficient, but not perfectly efficient. And people like you, people that listen to this, I think can have an edge.
I think that was a supposition I did have, was that the ADP market is efficient, and it's efficient overall. So like the way someone like Leone or Hayden Winks would do the analysis and then correlate draft position to fantasy points, that is 100% accurate, that draft position and ADP, the higher up you go, the more likely you are to score fantasy points. Mm-hmm. But at a very micro level, it will be wrong and make assumptions that prove to be incorrect. And I'm not even saying I believe this one way or the other, but for an example, Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs ADPs right now, the market is, if you just drafted exactly how they were done, you would end up with a ton of one or the other, right? Depending on when you were drafting, right? So yep. Maybe if Diggs is a little bit ahead, you end up with all your CJ Stroud teams are Steph Diggs and CJ Stroud, right? Or conversely, all Nico Collins or all with him. But in a micro sense, it could be very wrong, right? If Collins happens to be the one, if from a variance perspective, Collins is going to get the higher average depth of target, so he's going to score the longer touchdowns. His spike weeks will probably be spikier. And this is like a
low also condition. Just could be the guy, right? Maybe sure. He is the superstar that we saw at the end of, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I believe that either, but it's possible.
Right. So one of those two guys, all the evidence we have available, is probably going to have a very good fantasy season, probably finish actually higher than where they're being drafted, right? I think right now they're like the wide receiver 14 and 16 or something like that. And if you gave me a line of like minus 110, you can bet a Texans wide receiver finishes inside the top 12, I would probably take it. And yeah, that's a spot where if you have super high conviction in the one who's being drafted second, that's like a giant edge to be gained over the field, because you are going to advance more teams. You're going to a certain percentage of teams that would have been huge dogs in round 15 and round six, or weeks 15 and week 16, are then going to be huge favorites because you have this really good player when 8% of overall teams drafted this other guy who's a low advance rate. So that's going to be the thing that I'm more mindful of, is it's okay to take stances higher up in the draft because you're just going to be creating such massive leverage versus the other teams that you're facing in the elimination rounds.
100%. And I will say, in regards to this upcoming draft summer, I think it's tougher. I think we've had a little bit of a changing of the guard in like the fantasy football landscape, where it was quite a bit easier over the last, since Underdog's been around. It was Derrick Henry and Joe Mixon and Alvin Kamara and Dalvin Cook, right? And Austin Eckler even has aged out of that group. It was like a lot of running backs, first of all. It was a lot of running backs, and there's not as many running backs in the first few rounds anymore. But also it was like, we knew that the end was coming for an entire core of running backs that we've been drafting in the first and second round for 6-7 years. So it became a little bit easier to maybe take some positions against some of those guys. Now it's a bunch of wide receivers who are young and awesome, and like Bijan and Breece Hall. So it is a little bit tougher, but I totally agree with your general stance there. And the other thing that has helped evolve my game, I think, is not even just like I have conviction about, I do kind of have conviction about Nico Collins over Steph Diggs, but even if I didn't, just saying, like taking a step back and saying, well, look, Davis just outlined the case for why couldn't Nico be the one for the Texans? Or why couldn't it just be, you know, 1A, 1B, and Nico's the guy who peaks at the right time, or he has the big playoff. Like,
so that's, you know, that's the other thing, is because it's such a weekly game in this format that it doesn't even matter if you're macro wrong, if you're micro correct in the weeks where it matters.
100%. Was George Pickens, you know, micro right last year in the sixth round?
If I remember right, he might have even been a negative advance rate guy, like sub 16%. Yeah.
And everybody remembers Amari Cooper or CeeDee Lamb because of kind of the way that they had their big games in the best ball playoffs or the fantasy playoffs. George Pickens was like right there with those guys, had the huge, you know, almost 40-point fantasy game. I think that was on Saturday, Christmas Eve. Was that Christmas Eve? Maybe. I think that George Pickens had the big game. But like, was he a good pick? Like, if you look at his end of year results or, you know, anything, was he a good pick? Not really, but he turned out to be a great pick. In best ball, Amari Cooper had the huge, week 16, and then doesn't play in week 17. And it's like, did you actually want him? No, the ideal would be to not have him, but somehow get to the finals, which was very difficult. So all that's to say, there's so much kind of chaos and variance around this that whether you have conviction or not, you can just say, look, the market is pretty sure about this situation. And I don't know how sure it is. And I think the Texans wide receiver room that you mentioned is a really good one. Like, I mean, if Tank Dell was the guy, would I be shocked? I think he's a dog. But
I mean,
like,
I would be pretty shocked. I think if I was betting that, it would be more likely to me that Tank Dell becomes like fancy Cole Beasley than Tank Dell significantly out-earns targets over the other two. But your reward is going to be greater because he's cheaper. It's easier to do the turn stacking with Stroud. Like, you could just take Dell, then Stroud, like just the way ADP, I mean, who knows what it's going to look like a month from now, but the way it works right now is just very easy to do that. You obviously have higher end premium guys that you took in rounds 2 and 3 instead of the other two Texans guys. But I mean, from a super macro level, the easiest way to have these leverage spots pay off is to have conviction in an offense. Because then that just means all the ADPs are going to be wrong. And it means that by association, Dolphins, my early team in the big board right now has been the Vikings, Justin Jefferson. You can sometimes get him in pick 7. Jordan Addison is wide receiver 39. Hawkinson, it's weird because he's not going to be ready for week 1. But TJ Hawkinson is going after like Ladd McConkey or whatever. Right. And we know it's a weekly game. We know tight end scoring doesn't really matter. I mean, if you're really bored listening to this, go look at the week 17 tight end scoring from last season. You know, it's Juwan Johnson had a difference making score and everyone else was useless. Basically, it just didn't matter. And McCarthy in the big board is free. I mean, he's like, actually, like, you can't do it anymore, but he was like a 20th round pick. Now, when he gets drafted by the Vikings, I think he's going to go up to the Kirk Cousins range. I think he's going to be like the quarterback 19 or something.
Yeah.
But that's just one example. There will be, even after the draft, there will be other examples of this where you're like, pretty sure just the I mean, the Texans last year was the spot where just the whole prices were off.
Yeah, and that's why I was, when I mentioned the Dolphins, like specifically the backfield last year of the Dolphins, if you had conviction that it was Raheem Mostert, you were like right, and you still should have taken Achane. It was a weird, it played out in a weird way. But if you just said, like you said, this doesn't make sense. There's no Dolphins running back going in the top 120 or whatever. Somebody is going to do something because that's what happens in Mike McDaniel offenses, and they have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. If you just said, I just have conviction the market's wrong about the Dolphins, just like shove your chips in, and you made a whole shitload of money on Raheem Mostert and even Achane to a lesser extent. So there's just a bunch of situations like that where I think it's really advantageous. It's up to each person to determine like that overweight position. Everybody handles that a little differently.
Sure.
But I do think we should be playing the game trying to exploit it, not just trying to like let the chips fall to it. You know what I mean? Kind of like you mentioned what you did last year.
It's like two different things. It's I'm going to have 150 teams that are all well-constructed, good. They have good rosters. I don't have any dead weights here. They all have correlation. Or I have 150 well-constructed teams with a portfolio that all makes sense, that works together, not 150 teams competing against each other.
Bingo. And I think the hard part for people to wrap their head around with that is like, you have to accept a certain level of risk. Like there are things that you'll, you know, our famous, you know, Mike Leone, like, aren't you worried? There's going to be about 100 aren't you worried questions when you finish, if you draft the way that we're talking about here, where you're like, yep, I'm extremely worried if this, you know, if this guy gets hurt or if this guy has a big game, right? I took a stance against Stephon Diggs. If he has a big week 17, like, guess what? You know, it just isn't going to be my year. But we do that in every other game like this, right? DFS, you show up, you play your, you know, I'm playing a baseball team right now as I have a baseball team in play. My hitters suck today. Guess what? I move on to tomorrow and it is what it is. We just move on. And people struggle with that in best ball because of the, I think, the psychological elements of this is a full year.
Well, it's,
you know,
it's just one slate, but you have to wait 200 days to figure out how right you were. Yeah.
Yeah. And even when you're right, the Amari Cooper, like, were you right? Were you wrong? George Pickens, were you right? Were you wrong? Like, it's even hard to determine if you were right. You know, the only times we know is like Tyron and Puka were right. You know what I mean? Like the Dolphins running backs were right. Those were right. But there's so many shades of gray that it's hard for people to say, like, why would I ever full fade somebody? Or why would I ever take a huge overweight position? And I understand that approach. But I think what you said is perfect. The market is generally efficient at a macro level. But at a micro level, there are going to be a handful of situations that we all believe are really exploitable. And I want to target those exploitable situations and then kind of smooth things out there around them.
I think that is 100% accurate. So these are the guys that that I've got on over 50% of my teams in the big fours: Chase Brown, Jalen McMillan, Dylan Lauby, and Braylon Allen. I've got 39% Wandale, so he's pretty close in there. I mean, the Chase Brown one, it doesn't feel that great because his ADP has slipped against me the entire way. He's actually gotten cheaper the whole way. The rest of them have gotten more expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chase Brown one is, I don't think the Bengals are going to draft a running back. And even if they do, he's kind of the type of guy where, like, I can see the spike week getting in there anyways. I mean, obviously, if the Bengals draft Trey Benson or Jonathan Brooks, Chase Brown's going to be like the running back 65 in best ball mania or whatever. Like, the market's gonna forget he exists. But if they don't, I actually think he's likely to appreciate in best ball mania 5 because Zach Moss is who he is. He's just like the most mediocre dude alive. McMillan is like a bit of a meme, but I'm pretty sure he's better than Polk, who is like 30 spots ahead of him in positional ADP, maybe like 20 spots now because he's gotten more expensive. Lauby, I actually like, it is a meme, but he is going to be the best pass catching back in the class. Like, and it would be one thing if it was like, oh, NFL insiders are like, oh, this guy, he doesn't exist. What's the point? But like, Dane Brugler just put out his mock today and had him as a third round pick.
It's crazy.
Had him in the single digits as a pick to the Saints, which is like kind of crazy. And then Braylon Allen is like, he's going to be a Raider, or he's going to be a Buccaneer, or he's like a Cowboy. Like, he's just going to go to one of these teams who wants a 240-pound running back to handle the ball 20 times a game. I mean, I've never been so certain in a 14th round pick in my entire life.
So it's funny. We'll probably go to war over Braylon Allen, and it's not because I don't think he's insanely talented. I think he struggles to fit the modern NFL running back, right?
Yeah, he's not going to catch passes.
He's never going to catch passes. He can't pass protect. He got a little bit dunked on in his last year by Chaz Malusi, which is a little scary. It either means Chaz Malusi is a gift from God to football, to the football world, or Braylon had a tough last year. We'll
hurt his ankle early on. That's what. So I did read that. That was one of Dane Brugler's things that he noted in the Beast, was that he just played through an ankle sprain the whole year, pretty much.
Because he was definitely a lot worse this year.
He was a lot worse. His final
and my DFS teams, college football DFS teams, took a huge hit from it because it's Northwestern, Braylon. This is the 255 game.
Yeah, and he didn't do it at all. Yeah.
No, it was a tough year. But so Jalen McMillan is a really good one. He's not at the top of my list, but he was definitely a guy I was drafting at the back end where it's funny because I do prioritize from a college prospect perspective. Like this is probably why I'm a little lower on Braylon as well. The last year.
Yeah. Final season.
The final season is very, very much the most important to me. But there's, again, like everything, there's shades of gray on that. Jalen McMillan and Braylon's injury being a perfect example. Like, Jalen McMillan was closer to Rome Odunze in his second to last year than he was to Jalen Polk.
More college football fantasy points than Odunze there when in 2022.
Yeah, I think everybody going into this year considered them. Now, I'm not saying from a draft perspective, but like from a real football perspective, it was Odunze maybe 1A, McMillan 1B, strictly because he's more of an outside guy and McMillan was in the slot. But they were like a tandem, you know what I mean? It was like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. It was not Jalen Polk as the two and Jalen McMillan as this kind of ancillary weapon in the Washington offense. And he had a down year. He also had injuries. But I think in those situations, I like to kind of go against the last year a little bit and be willing to forgive a guy like that who I think is super talented. My top couple of guys, a little bit different. So my brand play of this year, you're Dylan Lobby, however we say his name. Mine is Malik Washington.
I've got a bunch of him too, just based off your tweets, pretty much.
I'm obsessed. It's a problem. I will own it. What could possibly go wrong with a Northwestern transfer who ended up at 3-9 Virginia and, you know, balled out in the crappy ACC? But he fits a little bit like McMillan did, mainly in his second to last year. What I'm looking for, especially in later round rookie targets, is just like I use the money ball approach to like, do they get on base? And it's like, if you just ball out to the extent that Malik Washington did at Virginia, like, I think it's really hard to say that this guy can't play like at all. And so, you know, he's not going to be a first round pick or probably a second round pick. After that, we'll see where he ends up, and it's going to be very scheme dependent. But I'm just buying those players who have proven to me, like, I'm pretty confident they're good at the game. And that's hard enough. Like, I'm not sure Keon Coleman is good at the game. And so if I can get a guy going later that I'm pretty confident is good, even though he needs probably the right scheme fit, I just shove my chips in on those guys. And Malik Washington is that guy for me. A couple of veterans, Eli Mitchell, which is just like the total zero RB bro thing.
It's a pretty good one. I could be convinced by that.
It's clearly just like a handcuff, you know, CMC gets hurt play, but I also, I'm pretty into this idea that this has been a lot of touches and a lot of games for Christian McCaffrey and the Niners. Theoretically, I know this is like fool's errand, right? Kyle Shanahan, we could say this as much as we want. CMC is going to be out there for 100% of snaps in week 8 against the New York Giants or whatever. Like, it's not going to matter, but it would make a lot of sense to me to rein it in a little bit on the Christian McCaffrey touches in meaningless regular season games. And then we saw CMC get hurt. It was in week 17, actually, that CMC got hurt and Eli Mitchell came in and just did what 49ers running backs do and destroyed Washington in the second half. And so
Eli Mitchell's points counted for me in a final last year?
I had CMC in one final, and then luckily no CMC in the other final, but I didn't have CD either. So we were capped to how high we could hit. But he scored, he had like 80 yards and touchdown, didn't he, Eli Mitchell, in week 17? Yeah,
he had like 19 underdog points, I think.
Yeah, he was awesome. But that's like the point, right? He's like, just get on the field for me, and he's going to smash for the 49ers. Here's one that most people would probably not expect. Ronnie Rivers. Okay. This is, for people that don't know, he's currently the backup running back to Kyren Williams on the Los Angeles Rams. Will he get replaced? It's certainly possible, but I think that, the Rams definitely love Kyren Williams. I think that's pretty safe to say. And I think that they showed that they're not really going to invest in that position. They're still at their, not really a Super Bowl window, but maybe they think they're in their Super Bowl window, and they don't have a ton of assets. Aaron Donald is gone, so that creates a big hole on the defensive side. I think that they just run it back with Ronnie Rivers, and it's kind of just another handcuff running back situation that nobody's interested in. Like, absolutely nobody is interested in guys like that at the end of the draft. So I like him. And then the rookie who I hate, I want to get your take on this one. I hate him as a prospect, straight up hate him, but I've drafted him like crazy because I'm falling for this narrative, but it's Blake Corum. You mentioned Braylon Allen.
He's a bad prospect, but yeah, he's going to go to the Chargers.
It's inevitable, isn't it?
And his
it just feels inevitable.
His old coach, I've got 9%, so I guess I don't have to, because I'm so busy taking Chase Brown right next to him. Right. But yeah, Corum is going to get drafted. I think it's pick 67 that the Chargers have in the third, if that off the top of my head is correct, in the third round. Yeah, he takes him. He comes in, and his old boy Jim Harbaugh gives him every opportunity to score a bunch of touchdowns in a Justin Herbert led offense. Yeah, it's 100%.
Gus Edwards is the competition. It's like, it just feels inevitable, and so that's not my favorite advice ever. Is like, I hate this guy, but I'm wish casting him to the Chargers. But I do think it makes like an absolute ton of sense. And then Troy Franklin, and you've probably talked to plenty about Troy Franklin to different people. I know a lot of the folks that we like are into Troy Franklin. He's fallen a little bit
out on him. I'm kind of, because it's weird. If I was in a dynasty league and I was on the clock at the 111 in a rookie draft, I'm totally taking Troy Franklin because his 90th percentiles are way, way better.
Yeah.
But Ladd is going to come in for the fucking whatever team, for the Bills, for the 49ers, like whatever team takes him. And he's catching 59 passes for 813 yards and four touchdowns. Like, I just, everything, because guys like this that don't really look that good from a data perspective, but every coach loves, I mean, that's the type of guy that's going to get on the field like immediately as a rookie, because if all the scouts love him, if all the scouts love him, you know, whatever. And I think Franklin, obviously, just got a harder path because he's going to play on the outside. Like, whatever team takes him is going to, and that's just harder to do as a rookie. Like, I don't really like taking Keon Coleman either. I expect Keon Coleman to be a first round draft pick by probably a good team, probably a Cowboys, Bills, someone like that. I just think it's like, well, one, the bust rate, I think, is pretty high on him.
Yeah.
And I just don't, like, it just might be very hard. Like, there are a lot of QJ outcomes for him where it's like, sure, he's out there, but I don't even know if he can get the ball. I don't know if he can get open enough. But Ladd, I'm like, Ladd is like locked into 12.5 PPR points a game. Like, that's just happening.
What's the worst career outcome for Ladd McConkey? That's because I totally agree.
Danny Amendola, where it's like he can't stay healthy, and he just never gets through a whole season. Yeah.
Also, shout out to you for pulling the role models of player comps there. If you're white, you're Ben Affleck from role models. That's what we all do. What's the best comp for Ladd? Another white slot receiver.
Well, the good comp for Ladd is Jacoby Myers. I think Ladd's good comp is Jacoby Myers, who never has to play for the Patriots.
For the Bills or something.
Right. So that, like, if Ladd McConkey, if I don't think the Bills would do this, but if the Bills did take Ladd McConkey with their first round pick, I mean, I think it would be bad. But if he does do that, he's going to score a lot of fantasy points, like a lot of fantasy points relative to rookie wide receivers.
And I do think he's good. I think his efficiency metrics, and now granted, you know, it's Georgia and they're a small sample because he never freaking played because he was hurt all the time. But they are what they are, and they are elite, like incredible from a yards per route run perspective. You know, just efficiency, everything was off the charts for Ladd McConkey. He's a better athlete, I think, than most people thought, probably because his name is Ladd McConkey. That doesn't scream good athlete to you, and I think he's a decent enough athlete. And I, same thing, I just think he can play. So, like, do I think, you know, is he ever going to be Justin Jefferson? No, he's not.
Yeah, he just has none of those seasons in his range of outcomes where, like, Troy Franklin is maybe, like, I don't know, 2% to get there or something.
Right, but, like, why can't he be or even a little better of, like, what Zay Flowers was, is or was with the Baltimore? Like, Zay Flowers is never going to be Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase either.
That's actually not that bad of a comp. Or
he can be
JSN.
A really good. Yeah, JSN, like, they can be really good. Especially in best ball, right? Like, we're specifically speaking best ball or dynasty maybe, but like, I don't know how often I'm going to love, you know, in a managed league, like clicking Ladd McConkey into my, you know, wide receiver three spot or flex spot or whatever.
That's the thing, is you're not going to want to start Ladd McConkey in those formats all that often. Cause he's going to project for, like, you're going to go pull up establishtherun.com. He's going to project for 12.76 PPR points. And you're going to be like, I don't know, whatever. Like, I'd rather start almost anyone else.
Yeah, it's Jacoby. I mean, that's what Zay Flowers was last year, too. It's like on DraftKings when Zay was in the, you know, 5K range, we were playing him in cash, you know, you're playing him in your cash lineup. Once he got more expensive, you're like, no, because he's going to go 6 for 60 or whatever. But in best ball, like, I don't care. Like, I had Zay, I finished 12th in best ball mania last year. Funny enough, I had George Pickens on that team. I also had Sam Laporta was basically my only tight end. you mentioned the tight end thing. Cole Turner was my tight end, too. Shout out to me for going on
I
the Cole
so
Turner
much
run.
Of that guy on DraftKings in the 20 round drafts.
Yeah, I know. And what a, he had one usable week. So shout out to week five, Cole Turner, but, to your tight end point, the position just like didn't matter, at least if you had Laporta, but those got the Zay Flowers, the Jacoby Myers, the himself, right? Those guys can be a lot more valuable in best ball because, and it's not because of how people think. It's like, sure, the usable weeks can help you during the regular season, but they do pop a couple times a year. Like you do get that random 9 for 105 and one Jacoby Myers game. Like it does happen and you don't have to worry about starting them, you know, you just get right to use it. And so I do find those guys to be helpful in best ball. Then just one more I wanted to throw out there. Cause it's kind of on the other side of what you mentioned with Braylon, like a bet against them not taking a Braylon Allen, Zamir White.
Got zero Zamir White.
I totally understand and probably would agree that the Raiders are going to do something at the running back position. But I like in these early contests, just like similar to what we talked about with like taking a stand against the market's idea on something, doing that with like the Zamir Whites of the world. You whiff plenty where you're like, this guy's the incumbent there. And like, but he's cheap. Right. It's like Zamir White is going and like pick 120 when this whole thing started. But the market just said, no, there's no way he's the guy. Right. They're for sure going to bring somebody in. And it's like, OK,
that is a good point. Yeah.
Worst case scenario, I have backup Zamir White at pick 125. Like, that's not ideal, but it's not over. Like, I'm not dead. Over. You know, he's not Rashad Penny or whatever from last year. Like, he could be OK. And best case scenario, I get that what you're looking for with Braylon Allen, you know, and we've seen him be good in this offense. So I have plenty of those guys where it didn't work, of course, too. But every once in a while, you get lucky on the Zamir White.
And
so he's up
there
for
me. If the Raiders get out of the draft without a running back, or maybe not until day three, if the Raiders get out of the, let's see, what is their depth chart of guys under contract behind him right
Madison.
Now?
They signed Alexander Madison.
Oh, Madison. Okay, so someone who just like doesn't exist, really.
The best thing for him is they signed this total shit.
Well,
veteran
you know,
backup.
I think that, but I thought the same thing with Damian Pierce last year, and then Devin Singletary just like stone cold took his job. Like Devin Singletary was the Alexander Madison memorial signing from last year, and then he just like totally stole his job. So maybe not.
I think we've just been way wrong about how good Devin Singletary is, by the way, for like 5 years.
Well, no,
every year.
So Devin Singletary is good in a way that a fantasy player doesn't care about, but a coach loves.
Right. Kyren. It's Kyren. He's the same. He's good in the same way Kyren is good. It's not explosive, but he just does the shit that coaches love.
That's what I think in a different but similar way is going to happen with Braylon Allen, where whatever team takes him is going to be a team that values that archetype. Like the Chiefs are not going to take Braylon Allen. They have no use for Braylon Allen, but the Raiders, the Cowboys, one of these teams, I think, is like the Titans. I mean, probably not now because the Titans are like a big analytics front office or whatever, but like the Ravens, even, you know, just because I think the Ravens are a sneaky team that's going to take a rookie running back that no one anticipates right now.
Mm-hmm.
They have, I was just talking with Gretch, they have 6 day 3 picks. I mean, I'd bet my bottom dollar that one of those 6 day 3 picks is a running back.
And no, really nobody behind Derrick Henry, right? Keaton Mitchell blew out his knee.
And Justice and Hill is on like a super vet minimum deal with them. Yeah.
And look, I love Justice Hill, but I mean, I think it's about time we decided that he's an NFL football player, but like, that's about the extent of it. You know, special teamer can fill in like we saw last year if somebody absolutely needs somebody to play. But I don't think that they're trying to win a Super Bowl, right? So I imagine that they could. And I mean, Derrick Henry and Braylon Allen in the same backfield would be absolutely hilarious. But I would not be shocked because, Keaton is the change of pace guy, but Justice can play on passing down. So it would be a fit, I think.
Yes. Okay. My most drafted quarterbacks are all the rookies. May, Daniels, then I have Mahomes at 17%, Caleb at 16%, and JJ McCarthy at 13%. I mean, I just have, because they were, before the Bears traded Fields, there was this, I mean, I don't know what it was. I guess it was just this delusion, this group delusion that either Fields was going to be starting for the Bears or some team was going to trade a first round pick for him. I mean, for over 50% of the drafts in the big board, Justin Fields was being drafted as a top 10 quarterback in fantasy, which meant that Caleb was either being viewed as a guy who was, I guess, just no one. I don't know what the market was thinking, but he went from being the quarterback 16 to the quarterback, what is he, quarterback 12 now? Mm-hmm. And then the Keenan Allen trade helped. I mean, Caleb is, if you love losing money on Trey Lance and Justin Fields when they were rookies, you're going to love losing money on Caleb Williams, because Caleb Williams is stepping into that situation, except with good pass catchers. He's going to come in and immediately have good guys to throw the ball to.
I think he might be the biggest winner of this pre-draft offseason thus far, Caleb Williams, or at least the biggest winner that people aren't talking about, right? Because there's Zamir, who is a big winner so far. There's, you know, the running backs and wide receivers that we love to project and get excited about projectable volume for. But from like, we know he's going there, and rookie quarterbacks typically not having, you know, great situations around them. The Bears have invested in the offensive line to get that better. Now they can also continue to invest in the offensive line because the running backs are taken care of. They got three good ones. Cole Kmet's taken care of at tight end, and they got two, you know, Pro Bowl caliber veteran wide receivers, two veterans who are just like also a perfect fit, right, for a rookie. This isn't some, you know, Mike Williams or whatever type veteran. This is like the security blankets of all security blankets that you could get. I think it's maybe the best situation we've ever seen, certainly for a number one overall pick, probably not for a rookie quarterback overall. That was probably Trey Lance, which
Mahomes.
Is pretty Mahomes. You're right.
Mahomes
you're right.
Went into the best situation a rookie quarterback's ever gone into.
You're right. You're right. Was that but what year
Caleb
of Tyreek?
Was pretty close.
Pretty goddamn close. Nobody can go better than Tyreek and peak Tyreek and Kelce. But man, Keenan, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet with those running, DeAndre Swift.
And they're gonna take a wide receiver with one of these other picks. My fanfic is that they just say fuck it, we want to score 27 points a game. Let's take Rome at pick 9.
Oh God, that would be unbelievable. The other thing is, they're going to be good, like legitimately good. The defense is good.
The defense got so much better in the second half of the season.
It was crazy. We loved to, and I do think it was a dumb trade, but the Montez Sweat thing looked stupid at the time, but he's just really good. And so it probably was not a great use of assets, but they really turned their defensive around. And so now it's like, what do they need? Like specifically need a little more offensive line help and another pass catcher. Like all that's good for Caleb. It's all good for Caleb. So
and they can get
I totally
that
agree with you.
One of two ways. They can trade down from the 9 pick and get a couple extra picks, or they can just take an absolute stud at 9. You know, they can take Rome. They can take one of these. I don't, outside of Joe Alt, I don't know anything about the other available
Same.
tackles.
Same.
So I'm not going to try and pretend, but like they're going to be able to add another blue chipper. I mean, just an alt, the fucking Carolina Panthers. What an insane bag fumble from the Carolina. I have heard this. Let's do Drake May first. So I have 26% Drake May. I mean, I get the market's enthusiasm for Daniel specifically because he is going to run so much, and I think it doesn't matter if he's a Patriot. Like if it works out perfectly, May is a Commander, Daniels is a Patriot, McCarthy is a Viking, and they're all awesome for fantasy, or at least set up to do well. If it's Daniels to the Commanders, May to the Patriots, it's not going to feel good. It's going to feel like I just made a big mistake because Drake May is going to be a bad Patriot. It'll be the same thing we saw out of Bailey Zappi and Mac Jones. Just like no one will get open. They're going to be taking sacks. I mean, May will push the ball down the field a little bit more. To who? I don't know. Tyquan Thornton, I guess. You know, I don't know. He'll be better than that. But May as a Patriot is a disaster for fantasy.
I totally agree. I did exactly what you did. My highest exposure quarterbacks are the three rookies. I'm not as on JJ McCarthy, but I get it. But these three rookies, I think I was kind of stunned. At first I was stunned at their prices when you just like pull open, right? You top in your first big board. I was like, oh my God, this class is viewed as one of the best rookie quarterback classes. They all run, particularly Jaden Daniels. You know, like you said, two out of three of them are going to land in good spots. And I'm not sure the spot matters that much for Jaden Daniels, exactly like you just said, with the way that he runs. And then they were all going, I mean, Drake May was going, like you said, in the 140s, 150s on underdog. It was pretty crazy. And then you do look a little bit at the quarterback landscape. We're pretty lucky when they're healthy. The amount of quality quarterbacks is pretty darn good for fantasy, but that's a great reason, I think, for these rookies to be a huge part of your portfolio. They can only get so expensive. Like they can't climb any further. And we know how high
about the max they can get without something else. I don't think no one's going to go, but like no one's going above Purdy. I don't think
Minnesota's would have to move up for like Daniels or May. And even then, I don't know how high they go. You know, it would have to be something crazy.
May as a unexpected. Viking could get pretty high.
I think so. I think so too. And you know, I am talking about myself, the fantasy bros with the runners, Jaden Daniels in Minnesota with Justin Jefferson and all those guys. I would be pretty excited for that too. So I'm curious on your take on those three guys though. Like I'm drafting the shit out of them. I agree with everything that you said on all those guys, but what's your like real take? Like, you know, you're on the clock in a dynasty league or you're in a managed league that you're draft.
I'm hoping in a dynasty league to not have to take Jaden Daniels, for someone else to take Jaden Daniels and leave me neighbors. I actually have a couple 102s that I'm trying to turn into 104s, like trading back
to get neighbors
to get, or if it's Daniels, it's Daniels or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's neighbors though, because I don't think Daniels is good. I think he's awesome. I think there's more. I actually have more concern about him as a passer than I do about May, because he's older. He's 23. He's played five seasons. Now, I've been pretty convinced by a lot of this offseason reporting about just how miserable that junior season at Arizona State was. Like, Herm Edwards is like a dead man walking. I think Jaden Daniels is, I want to say his parents, one of his parents died, or maybe his grandparent that he lived with. Some personal tragedy. The program is like a huge nightmare. It just was like an overall nightmare situation for everyone involved. He transfers to LSU. You know, do I want to ding him for the fact that he played with two first round wide receivers in his breakout? I mean, a little bit, but like you still got to make the throws. It's like weirdly with LSU, we've seen it go both ways. Mettenberger with Beckham and Landry, and then Burrow with all those guys. So it's gone both ways. But the concern with Daniels is he's super skinny, and he not even watching his tape, just watching his highlight reel, he gets smoked. I don't know. I don't know what is he. Maybe he likes it and it just amps him up or something. But like you watch Lamar play. I mean, count how many times a defender gets a clean hit on Lamar. They're like never squaring him up. You watch Jaden Daniels and it looks like he's getting in a skiing accident. I mean, he'll just go flying. It is nuts. And yeah, his combine weight was 210 or whatever, the same way that Bryce Young's combine weight was 208. Like, yep. I think LSU listed him at 180 pounds when he transferred there. That feels much more true to me. So for best ball as a rookie, I think I don't care, because a 1 year injury, like, anyone can happen, but I'd be very worried about Jaden Daniels multi-year. He does a meniscus here. He has a broken elbow here. He misses 3 games with a concussion here. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of his rookie contract, you're in the Justin Fields zone where the team doesn't want to extend him.
Yep. I think that's a very real outcome for Jaden Daniels. I forget, was it Georgia or someone? I forget. The best clip from all of the highlights of him getting murdered was, I can't remember if it was zone read or if he just took off up the middle as the pocket collapsed.
First and 10, first quarter, he runs right at the linebacker, and the linebacker just like annihilates him.
It was an Oklahoma drill, and like Daniels had no interest in making him miss or anything. And he runs, he's also tall, so he's not only skinny, he's like kind of long and lanky, and he's running straight up. It looked like the kid who showed up to his first day of Little League football and like got into this tackling drill against the kid who's been playing for 6 years or whatever, you know, the badass middle linebacker on the Little League team versus the kid who just showed up. I don't know what he was doing, but he gets picked up and like pile drive down into the ground. It is like, I thought he was like going to be done after that. And he always pops right up. But eventually that doesn't happen right at the NFL level. You can't take those hits. Also on one hand, that's about as terrifying as it gets. You have a guy who runs like Anthony Richardson, who weighs 180 pounds. That's not a very good recipe for health at the NFL level. But the other thing is, like, these are learnable skills. Like, the accuracy is not that learnable. Like, even Josh Allen has learned it a little, but he still can be pretty inaccurate.
Throws. Yeah.
So like you can improve, but at the end of the day, kind of some intellect things around the quarterback position and accuracy are not, like, if you don't have it, you just don't have it. And he does have a lot of those traits that we want. And his concerning traits are ones that are more learnable, at least more learnable, right? Like, not necessarily totally learnable, but like, learn, dude, buddy, like, that's the first thing his quarterback coach or whatever is going to tell him. Like, you are the franchise now. You cannot do that. Like, it's not acceptable. You can't do this. And so I'm willing to dive in. And again, through a best ball lens, it's like, look, some of these guys are going to get hurt. Maybe he's a touch more likely, but he's also a lot more likely to have spikes with his rushing. So I'm willing to just kind of eat that variance if he does get hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would pretty much approximate the way that I would feel about it. The one who I mean, I just think everyone's wrong about Drake May. There just has been this cottage industry of worrying about, like, Drake May's footwork or whatever. I mean, one, he's like a pretty strong prospect from an analytical perspective anyways. Mm-hmm. But also, like, you just watch him play and you just don't even have to squint to imagine what it will be like at the NFL level. It will be, if it works out, he will be like Justin Herbert, right? He's got the arm talent. He's got the questionable footwork. He's big. He's tall. He's strong. And for a fantasy, it works out because he's like just a total hero ball player. He's like, yeah, like I bet I can throw the football over them mountains. Like, and I mean, that's why everyone wants him to go to the Vikings. That's why everyone is doing the fanfic of the Viking, of him falling there, because I just imagine Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and TJ Hawkinson with a guy who wants to push the ball down the field. Like, we actually saw it with Nick Mullins, and he threw for like 450 yards a game.
Somebody in the Spike Week Discord today, and I understand why they said it, but we were actually talking about Addison, because I'm not super into Addison like as a real life football, but like, I think he's fine, but I'm a little concerned with just exactly how good Jordan Addison is. And someone who was making the bull case for him was like, well, he had 100 yards and a touchdown with Nick Mullins. And I was like, that sounds good until you go look. Nick Mullins was throwing for 400 yards every goddamn game for the Minnesota Vikings. And so, look, we were playing him in cash games and drawing DraftKings. At the end of the season, he was throwing for so many yards. So all that is to say nothing about Nick Mullins. It's to say that situation, all the way down to the coaching and the weapons, is so good that whoever lands there, it's going to be a tough thing to it's going to be tough to whiff, particularly if it's May or Daniels. That would be just absolutely insane. I also think this happens with every it's happening with Caleb. We get fatigue. It's like we knew that Drake May and Caleb Williams.
Yeah, the Caleb fatigue is insane though. Like Caleb did nothing wrong. It's not his fault that USC like could not play defense.
No, it wasn't his. Yeah, they were still scoring. It wasn't his fault they were losing. It was Lincoln Riley's fault that they were losing games, you know, not his fault. And so I feel the same way about the Drake May fatigue as I do about the Caleb Williams fatigue. It is just that is fatigue. It's not really anything about those guys. And I think that they're going to be good NFL football players.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, McCarthy is like, if he ends up being a Viking, good. I don't know. He threw 700 passes in college. I don't know.
I can't.
Like, I don't
I
know.
Just can't do it. I just can't do it with JJ McCarthy. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But like compare his profile, like everything about him to these other three guys that we just talked about. And it is like, you're not even assessing like the same thing. Like we're not playing the same sport. He wasn't playing the same sport that Caleb Williams was playing. And so it's really hard for me to assess those kind of guys.
I mean, they really were doing like just totally different things.
One's turning around and handing it off and occasionally throwing a play action pass. And the other one is having to throw it 60 times for his team to win and put the whole team on his back and run around like Mahomes in the backfield. And so it's just hard for me to come around on JJ McCarthy. But again, from a best ball perspective, like those are some of the things that if he lands on Minnesota, I will set aside my dislike, just like I set aside my dislike for Blake Corum. Because I think that there's a strong likelihood he lands in a spot that's great for fantasy. I'm willing to do that for JJ McCarthy too, even though I really am not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, just what can you do? Where do you want Neighbors to go? Because so right now he actually has seen a rise in ADP, combination of the pro day stuff, some teams have him over Harrison stuff. I mean, I think unfortunately he's maybe destined to be a Giant, which, yeah. I mean, sure, he walks into like a 29% target share. That's good. It's not as good if the offensive line duplicates their performance from last year and Drew Locke and Daniel Jones are just on their asses immediately. Like, how many yards can that offense even throw for?
But would you rather have the potential that could come from that? Let's say the offensive line rebounds. Let's say Daniel Jones rebounds, or they draft right Nix or Penix or Rattler or something like that, and that's your second half of the year quarterback.
Bo Nix, I probably think he succeeds. Nix is just such a checkdown merchant. He probably just gets a butt. He probably just has like a super fancy Rashi Rice season, and it's a huge win.
I think so too. I mean, if you go watch. Obviously, it was basic. The Oregon passing offense was get it out quick into Franklin, Tez Johnson, and Bucky Irving's hands and just let them do their thing. And like, that's not amazing for Bo Nix, like ever being an awesome NFL quarterback, but it's sure as shit amazing for the superstar wide receiver who 30% of the time, that's what he's going to do is throw it to him and just get the ball into his hands. I still think, like, would you rather have that, what I was going to ask, or the Greg Roman Harbaugh offense, you know, with the Chargers? Like, so I think I would still rather have the Giants.
There just are, it's like, one, you just know the quarterback play is going to be good, and you still got to throw, even if Harbaugh gets his wish and the defense is amazing and it's the great, like, you still got to throw like a minimum of 450 times with Herbert, probably more, probably like 500.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
oh,
like, you know, 30% of those pass attempts is going to be really good. I mean, like, if Neighbors is as good as we think he is, and he's just like, because he's going to play out of the slot, I think, especially to begin. I mean, then you're talking about like super jacked 9.9 RAS Keenan Allen. And that is like, I mean, that is like a guy who could do the Puka Nacua rookie season over again.
Oh, yeah. And I do think Neighbors is a star. Like, I think if we're tiering, I would be more apt to put him in the tier with Marvin Harrison. I think it's a little fancy play to put him over, but I think that would at least be like maybe debatable. Although I think if we have Marvin Harrison fatigue too. Like, this class has a lot of fatigue of like, we knew Marv was generational. We knew Caleb was not necessarily generational, but the number one guy. And we knew May was the number two guy. Daniels made it at least interesting with the season that he had. Whereas look, yeah, Neighbors was amazing.
Gonna be a day three pick.
Right. Right. And I do like him again, like we talked about, but I think it's just like fatigue with like Marvin Harrison was so good with a guy who just transferred to fucking Syracuse. Like his quarterback is at Syracuse. And if you haven't watched Syracuse in the last couple of years of college football, they are a dumpster fire college football program. So he had horrendous quarterback play and was still incredible. So it's just Marv fatigue, but like kind of going back to the McMillan thing, like to the Rome conversation, I'm like, I like Rome just like everybody else does, but I don't think he sniffs the Neighbors, you know, Marv here. And I think some people are a little higher on him than I am. So all that's to say, I love Malik Neighbors and I'm not sure it matters. Like we're nitpicking the situation. I think he might just be that good.
Yeah. Kind of has been this trend popping up of like, oh, Marvin Harrison Jr. He didn't do any of the athletic testing. He, you know, it's like, oh, come on, dude. He's so good.
I love when people do that. Like, oh, why didn't he test? It's like, because he's going to be the third overall. Like, what do you mean? Why didn't he test? Why would he? Like, why would guys test? That's like people judge these kids more harshly than they judge themselves. And the testing thing is the best one. Like, there's no reason for most of these guys. Like, there's no reason for Marvin Harrison to ever do anything besides an interview at all in any of this
correct
process.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some guys that we have none of or very little of. So this is not intentional, but I have 4% CJ Stroud, and as he got more expensive, made me less likely to get him. So the thesis there is two ways. The one being Stroud doesn't run. I thought maybe he would. He didn't really at all as a rookie. He said at his draft press conferences, he's like, I can run. You guys saw me in the playoff game. I can do it. He didn't do any of it really as a rookie. And he's at either the same price or slightly more expensive than Pat. And I'm like, the Chiefs realized they flew too close to the sun last year. Like, you want to talk about lucky Super Bowls. I mean, obviously, you got to have a little bit of luck. But getting through, I mean, they got blown out by the Raiders at home on Christmas Day. Like, they got beyond lucky to get to where they got last season with that group of wide receivers. They're going to take a wide receiver with the first pick. They might take another one in round two or round three. In fact, think they probably will, because it's a pretty deep wide. I guess it depends on how quick that second tier of wide receivers gets depleted. Like if Roman Wilson is gone at pick 47, maybe they don't. But if it's like Jalen Polk or Jalen McMillan or Malik Washington or Jamari Thrash, like those guys are still available, then I think they will. And it's like, yeah, I can just specifically in the big board drafts, you can take Pat, you can take Kelsey Pat, or you can have Pat unstacked and then take three rookie wide receivers and just be like, yeah, well, one of them is going to end up on the Chiefs. So this worked in 2022 where Pat was the quarterback 5. He won MVP. He was awesome again. It didn't work last year. But if I'm going to bet on one of these pocket passers being one of the top three, like matching Hurts and Allen in terms of fantasy points per game, I'm going to bet on the one who's like, I literally watched him do it, and I'm pretty sure he's the best to ever do it. Stroud, I got no issue with Stroud, but it's you can't do both. And I prefer the Chiefs side of it, especially cost related.
I do too. I think the fall of Rashi Rice is making it easier as well.
And
we don't have to dive into all of that stuff, but he's plummeting, and I don't imagine we're gonna know anything super soon around that. So I imagine he's gonna keep getting cheaper, and I tend to draft those guys right, wrong, or indifferent. When we get that kind of talent on that offense with Patrick Mahomes falling, I tend to do it. So now we have the cheapest Kelsey's ever going to be, unless he comes back next year off a bad season. Hollywood is available to you if you want to. He's got a little pricey, yes, but he's available to you there. And what you outlined was like one of my favorite tactics in the big board is just like, just give me all the rookies with Mahomes, because I know they're taking at least one. And so, you know, worst case scenario, oh no, I have Patrick Mahomes. Like, I think I'll be okay with a bunch of rookie wide. Both of those things are good in a vacuum by themselves. If I happen to hit the perfect combination, then it's an absolute dream. So I totally, totally love that. And it's a similar thing for Stroud to me, is like Lamar's not that much more expensive. Mahomes is like the same price. Burrow's cheaper. You know, it's just, I don't love doing that where it's like, if I don't have a necessarily a reason to not love the guy, But it is back to your running point. It's like that is not his nature is not to run. He'll tell you he would tell you that too. He talked about that at Ohio State. They're like, buddy, you run like a 4 or 5. Why don't you scramble a little bit? He's like, do you see the guys I'm throwing to? I'm like, and right. Do you see my offensive line? My job is to get the ball to them. And so I just don't think he's ever going to run. I don't think he's ever going to get goal line carries like, you know, Josh Allen and these guys do. And so if I'm going to take a pocket passer that high, like you said, let's take the greatest quarterback of all time with the best weapons he's had since Tyreek, you know, peak Tyreek.
Yeah, I think it, like you said, it's like, I don't want my brand to be, oh, this guy faded CJ Stroud, but like,
yeah,
Stroud's got to go like 4,800 yards and 42 touchdowns or whatever, you know?
Does he even bear you? And like, I'm not even sure it's possible for that archetype to
at
like
that price. At that price.
Yeah. Right. If he does that as a, you know, last year, like it's a very different ballgame. But
yeah, he fifth did round bear you pick, if you didn't have yeah. if you didn't have CJ Stroud stuff last year. But like, I think the guy who's likely to bear you doing that this year is Kirk Cousins of the pass first archetype, who could just like, oh, I was taking Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert threw 503 passes, Kirk Cousins threw 750.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's just so hard. I would say near impossible for that person, you know, to do like the aren't you worried thing. The thing I'm least worried about amongst the million things I'm always worried about when putting together our portfolio, like we're doing here, is the expensive pocket passer. Like I'm just, it is what it is. He's going to have a good year. He's great. I would love to have him on my dynasty team. Like I would love to have CJ Stroud. I'm going to really love watching him. But like, I can just take Nico or Diggs or Tank or whatever and reap the rewards that way and not spend a fifth round pick on a guy who's going to run for 120 yards.
Right. Exactly. All right. Do you have a quarterback that you've been stone fading? I mean, those are the harder ones to find, like clear stone fades.
This is a little lazy, but Josh Allen, the price is just crazy, man.
I've got
the price
one
is,
Josh Allen team.
I don't expect to have any Josh Allen again. It's not, and he's obviously not a pocket passer, but we are in a little bit of uncharted waters. No Diggs, no Gabe. I suspect they'll be fine. Like he was fine last year with a declining Diggs and Gabe being trash like he always is. But like somebody does have to take a leap here, you know, whether it's the guy they draft or Kincaid or Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, like somebody's got to get a little better if he's going to pay off like a second round price tag. That's a little rich. So Allen is up there for me. And then I don't have zero, but I kind of wish I did. Another expensive guy is Jalen Hurts. So I want to get your take on the Eagles.
It's just too easy to take Hurts and Smith on the 3-4
turn.
It is. It's just too easy.
It really is. But I'm curious on your take on the Eagles from like the thing we were talking about at the beginning, like a, not necessarily exploitable, but kind of. The market has, you know, sometimes we latch on to like what we saw last year, right? Or like in the Gabe Davis example from a couple of years ago, what we saw in the one playoff game. It's like all of a sudden, you know, and I'm, you know, we're all trying to figure out who did this. I was driving that charge where we latch on to something or one season, right? CJ Stroud, one season. And we're like, oh my God, we got to move him up to the fifth round. The Eagles for almost a half of a season last year were borderline incompetent on offense, like awful, like straight up awful on offense. It was like maybe AJ Brown would have a couple good games, and that was about the extent of it. They lost Jason Kelsey. The coaching staff is back, so we're not getting like schematic changes. They don't motion anybody ever, by the way, which just drives me absolutely bonkers the way they run their offense with all that talent. But the market is not worried about, like, aren't you worried? The market is not worried about the Eagles.
I'm not.
And so
he's just
the
too
prices
good of a,
crazy.
He's too good
man.
Of a runner. He's too good of a runner. Like maybe AJ Brown doesn't pay off, and Puka and Garrett Wilson and Nico and
Saquon.
Marvin Harrison are all Saquon. They're
and,
all better
and
picks.
Saquon, yeah.
And maybe Devonta doesn't score the 3 long touchdowns a year that he needs, and Jalen Hurts doesn't throw that much, but there's just no universe where an upright and active Jalen Hurts doesn't score a minimum of 10 rushing touchdowns, probably more. And he played hurt last year. He had the ankle injury to the point that talking heads were saying, you should actually just start Marcus Mariota for your final 2 games of the year. Let Jalen Hurts rest and get ready for the playoffs, which, like, I mean, obviously it was stupid, but it's hard, much harder for Jalen Hurts to play with a hurt ankle than it is for Mahomes, for example. Like, they just, you know, it's just such a different thing. Now, the Kelce thing, it's definitely, there'll definitely be, like, the tush push will fail for the first time ever this year. It'll be like some, it'll be like some key spot. I don't even know who their center is now, but it'll definitely happen in one spot where they don't get it when they would have gotten it, like, at 100% clip last year. But I think it can be pretty much explained away by, like, well, also remember they had that crazy 6-week stretch where they, it was like Chiefs, Dolphins, Bills, 49ers, like they played like every good team in the NFL, and they were just getting there. They did just like every week was a playoff game for them.
Cowboys, Niners, Bills, Chiefs, Cowboys. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really not worried. I just like, and I think the discount between Allen and Hurts is, I mean, if Hurts scores more fantasy points than Allen this year, no one is going to bat an eyelash. It just would totally happen. And the positional thing of just being able to do Devonta Smith, Jalen Hurts at that turn just makes it so easy. And you can backstack him with Goddard as well.
Yeah, who, man, he was awful last year.
Yeah, he was. He was terrible.
That was a big disappointment. But I think it's two things for me. One, we talked about, like, our three highest owned quarterbacks are the rookies who all go outside the top 100 picks. Lamar's cheaper. I prefer Lamar at the elite.
Yeah, I
end.
Definitely prefer Lamar. Like Lamar, you give me, I can have 20% Lamar Andrews or 20% Devonta Jalen. I'm doing the Lamar Andrews for sure.
Exactly. We talked about the Mahomes thing. So it's just kind of a little bit of not necessarily these guys, but they're more expensive. The stacks are more expensive. Well, at least the stacks in for the Eagles are more expensive, and the options a little later are a little better. So you start playing that 2v2, 3v3, you know, 4v4 game or whatever. And I tend to like the other quarterback options just a little bit better. And I mean, the market is not concerned about the Eagles. And I agree with you, like, right, gun to my head, are you concerned? No. But it is, like, at least notable to me that, like, you know, we do this a lot where we dock teams for certain things, but then we go on the other side and we don't do it right. Like the Atlanta Falcons, we just ignored the fact that Arthur Smith and their quarterback play was a disaster for multiple years, and we just kept getting duped by it. And then, you know, we do it over again, and we're going to do it again.
Yeah, was it really Kyle Pitts' fault, or was it our expectation of Kyle Pitts that was that fault? You know,
right? Exactly. So I just think it was an interesting one. Can I toss out a couple running backs that I think are kind of interesting? I have not drafted a Devon Achane team yet.
Oh, can't. I totally get it. Like, you don't even have to sell me on it, but yeah. It's just not the way I'm playing this. It's like Devon Achane averaged 7.8 yards per carry. He might be dead. Like, Devon Achane might be like minus 5,000 to miss a game this upcoming season, probably multiple games. But I don't care. I'm drafting in March and April. I want the guy who literally did have a 50-point game last year.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know why I'm not drafting him, and I know why you are drafting him, and it all makes sense.
It's just a decision you got to make. And it's like, that's the thing is, he was so good. Like, if he had done it twice, so, like, let's say he did it twice. So he had the crazy game against the Broncos, and let's say he had a good game the next week, but then maybe let's say he came back from injury and he sucked. Like, he looked like Jeff Wilson out there. Then you could be like, you know what? There's just no reason to take Devon Achane here. Like, just absolutely no reason. But yeah, I mean, he might be my early vote for, like, most polarizing guy, where it's like half the field is taking him on all their teams, and then half the field is like, doesn't even have them in their rankings.
Yeah. And it's funny because I do tend to prefer his archetype of a player where the projectable volume people hate him because it's like, is he even going to start? Like, right? Like, how many carries is this dude even going to get when everybody's healthy? But like you said, the upside is, I mean, we saw it last year. And what if he is the guy? I mean, good Lord, he's definitely going to score a lot of fantasy points. But I think it's also the wide receiver landscape that that does some of it for me, where there are, I think it was shout out to a guy in our Discord, Big Country is what he goes by. I believe he said at the end of round 3, 4, and 5, there are 6 more wide receivers going than even last year. And we saw how much wide receivers got pulled up. And so it's a little bit of that too, where it's like, man, you get to like the, I mean, Hollywood Brown's going like the fifth round as like the fourth option on the Chiefs. It's like, it gets thin pretty quick at wide receiver. And so that's a little bit of it too. It's like, I got to sacrifice him. So be it.
Which is like, I get that from a structural perspective. I like to do Achan, this maybe is counterintuitive, as a second running back with Breece or Bijan, because then I know I've got that sick running back. Like, I've got 19 point running back production in weeks where Achan is like not available or whatever. Yeah. And just like, if you had a time machine and or whatever, a magical glass, and you could see the results of any player in the pool, I always ask this question for best ball. Achan might be the answer this year, because you get the answer of how many games he's played. And if you knew Achan was playing 17 games, I mean, you're like, shit, he might be a first round pick. I might take him over Jahmyr Gibbs if I knew he was going to be available for every game.
And yeah, you flip over the cards. I mean, because the numbers are going to be, like, to your polarizing point, like, the numbers are going to be, there is no like how he had 1,050 yards, you know, like that is not, it's he had 600 yards and played five games, or he had 2,200, you know, he had 2,200 yards or what, like, it's going to be so drastic that you're really going to know. And I think he is that. And so that's what makes him a super fascinating player, but he's a big decision point. Like you said, he's a pretty big decision point because of a lot of different factors, both for him and for kind of the wide receiver pricing and all that. This one is like a little bit easy, but unsurprising.
Is it Chubb?
No, it isn't. It's not Chubb, but although I might have zero of him.
I just checked. I do have zero.
So yes, I have zero Nick Chubb. He is back with Cleveland, but Donta Foreman, I like to call Donta Foreman the cockroach of the NFL. Like, no matter how hard we try to get rid of Donta Foreman, he pops up on a new team every year, and he has like a 35 point fantasy game at some point during the season. He keeps other guys off the field. I kind of like Donta Foreman a little bit, but my super duper easy one is Rashad White. Like, that's a typical thing that people that know me would say, like, oh, the guy who's probably not very good but got a ton of touches last year at an elevated price.
Rashad White is Damian Williams. It's like
100%.
Weren't you
the Damian Williams guy too?
It actually saved me on Damian Pierce last year, where it's like, if your team has nothing invested in you and you were just okay but not really good, you're like, you fumble, you miss a game with an ankle injury. Like, it just, they have no loyalty to you. They are moving. Yep. And I mean, this is before the draft. Like, why can't they take Trey Benson? Why can't they take Isaiah Davis? You know, and if they do take a rookie round five, who's to say that round five rookie doesn't, and I actually, it hurts me to do this, but I don't really have a ton of Pacheco either, because I think the Chiefs are just pretty likely to add. Their backfield right now is Denarik Prince, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Pacheco. Like, Andy Reid loves to run the ball too much to go in. Like, they're going to add somebody.
It's another sneak. Like, so many of these spots for rookie running backs. That's why in this, in the big board, little board, what these early contests, I've been taking a ton of rookie running backs, even though the class is bad, right? So it's counterintuitive. Where you're like, yeah, but we all think this class is
bad. There
are
like 10 backfields with 150 fantasy points available to anybody.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not even accounting for, like, right, like you said, so the Chiefs have this something available, but we talked about, like, the Ravens. Derrick Henry is going to get his, but, like, also, what if Derrick Henry goes down? They don't have anyone else. Like, the league winner can come from one of these spots very, very easily. And the fact that nobody's investing in these backfields kind of is an indication that they're going to draft somebody. So even
the Cowboys lottery ticket with everyone, because if the Cowboys just wake up one day and they just decide your favorite running back, whoever it is going to be their third round pick, that guy is immediately going to be running back 27. And it could literally be Kamani Vidal. If Kamani Vidal is a third round pick, like, you better learn everything about him, because he's going to be a round eight pick in Best Ball Mania.
And everybody has decided it's Jonathan Brooks. And, like, I get it, right? I did the Blake Corum thing. I totally, if I was a betting man, I would pick Jonathan Brooks to be that guy. But, like, we get so overconfident. Like you said, it could be Rasheen Ali or Kamani Vidal, sure, or, you know, of course, any of these guys, Audric Estime, pick your favorite running back, or you're not your favorite running back. It could be absolutely any of those guys. They did bring in Royce. Was that yesterday? Royce Freeman, Freeman signed with the Cowboys. And that's like air quotes signed. He's a dog to make the roster, I think, in my opinion. I was gonna bring up one other guy. Oh, have you mentioned Chase Brown as one of your stands? I love Chase Brown too, but a guy who I had drafted zero of, and then once he landed in the backfield with Chase Brown, I am taking some, is Zach Moss. Are you taking any of him, or are you just taking that stand on Chase?
No,
against
just
Moss?
Ideologically, I can't. Like, because it's just like betting against my bags. I bet if I have any of him, I've got him on $40 worth of teams, so that means four teams. I bet if I went and looked, I bet they're all Chase Brown teams. I bet they're Hancock teams.
Yeah. I was mad at myself though that I was taking so many different spray and pray running backs at the end of drafts. And I mean, I mentioned I have huge Ronnie Rivers bags. It was like, you probably could have sprinkled some Zach Moss in there, you know, like when he was going at the very end of the big board. But I do think I'll be taking both of those guys for me personally when the tournament's launched. I mean, they're both cheap. Like, I feel like that it reminds me, not the same thing as the Dolphins, but we're going to do this thing again with these like really high value backfields where we just don't appropriately value the whole backfield all together. Like, the Bengals backfield is insanely valuable. Like, whoever is back there,
yeah,
getting,
I mean,
touches.
Joe Mixon just like LARPed his way around to like 10 straight running back one finishes while never being good.
Yeah, he hasn't been good for forever. And like you said, yeah, and he had the monster weeks every single year, right? He had I think that was the Carolina game this year that he had do you have four in the first quarter or three in the first quarter and four total touchdowns? But like, that's the power of that backfield. Same thing with the Chiefs, right? Like, we just now finally, Pacheco is up there and got expensive, but we've been able to get a cheap Pacheco and McKinnon every single year, you know, up until now. And so there's just these backfields that I'm just like, I definitely prefer Chase Brown. That's much more of my brand, but I'm not going to ignore the veteran as well. So that's going to be kind of to the core assets thing. I'm very interested in the Bengals.
All right, let's try and see if I can find some wide receivers that I have not taken any of. I mean, actually, my spiciest one, people really hated this, but I'm taking Justin Jefferson over the other first-round wide receivers other than Lamb. So I have, like, no Tyreek. I have, like, very little Chase. I mean, look, it's very simple. I think that he was the number one pick last year. Nothing changed other than that he missed time due to something that was not his fault, not a repeatable injury. The market is assuming, I guess, that Sam Darnold is going to be the starting quarterback. I don't believe that at all. I think J.J. No. McCarthy or Drake May will be. That's a pretty spicy one. I have very little Garrett Wilson just because I prefer the two wide receivers to go ahead of him. And I actually take A-Chan over him sometimes too. Oh, and I get no Brandon Ayuk because Debo's better. Like, no, no Ayuk.
I haven't been taking much of either of those guys, but I do have a little bit of a spicy take that kind of to our portfolio conversation. They go right at the 2-3 turn, and you see so many teams build 49er stacks out of the 101, or if McCaffrey goes 102, people just can't help themselves but to take both of the 49ers wide receivers when they took Christian McCaffrey and then, you know, plan for Purdy later. So I don't love, I agree with you on the Ayuk Debo thing. I don't love either of them at cost, but even if I'm going to do it, like, God forbid, do not take it on don't do it on the CMC team, because that's how everybody's doing it. Do it on your, right? You want to get a unique team with Debo Samuel? Do it with Justin, do it with your Justin Jefferson team. Don't do it with Christian McCaffrey like absolutely everybody else, or CD like absolutely everybody else is doing.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to have Debo on a bunch of these teams. Yeah, I've got 25% Debo, so I take him over kind of everyone in that range. Who else? Oh, this is a good one. The Green Bay wide receivers. Oh. Dontavian Wicks is my fourth most owned wide receiver, but everyone's going to have their own Packers take. Like, there's going to be Tucker Kraft bros. There's going to be Bo Melton bros. Like, everyone's got a take.
I think I'm a Tucker Kraft bro. I might be a Bo Melton bro too.
I think
I'm
a Tucker
totally
Kraft
honest.
Bro too.
I think I am. But Wicks is up there in my wide receiver list and is my highest owned Packers wide receiver. I just think you tell me who the best wide receiver is in the Packers room. I mean, we all have our takes, but can anyone be that confident? I think Jaden Reed
is
would
like
be
their Debo, but like he's not like a conventional X wide receiver who can just go and win the way that Wicks is.
I think he's the best football player, which is important, but I don't think that necessarily means he'll always be the best fantasy wide receiver in that room. I think Wicks might be the best actual NFL outside wide receiver on the team.
Matt LaFleur said he reminds him of Devontae Adams. That's been buoying my strategy the entire offseason.
Well, that's all we need, right? As long as how many times has that gone wrong over the course of both
never.
Of our careers? And then absolutely never. Remember the Antonio Gibson is the new CMC in Washington with Rivera and oh my God, I'll never
forget. Talk about a guy I wish that I forgot existed. I keep drafting Antonio Gibson.
Now he's on the Patriots. Get your Antonio Gibson, Jaden Daniels stacks together.
Oh, I'm still taking
him
now. Yeah. It's not good.
They paid him a little bit. I was kind of shocked.
He's making more money than Austin Eckler is.
Jesus Christ. What a world we live in. I want to float you another wide receiver I've taken zero of. Calvin Ridley.
He's just in a total dead zone. Like you only take him when you're just like desperate for wide receiver points.
I don't think, did he really show us he's good? Like, this guy's also old. I bet most people listening to this, maybe they're on the sharp end.
No, they still don't know he's 29, I bet.
I don't think people understand how old Calvin Ridley is. Well, he came in at 24, right? Or 23 or 24.
He's closer in age to Keenan Allen than Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. I mean, I think people think he's young. Obviously, he had the year off thing that he basically took 2 years off almost. So it was a weird situation that I think skews that a little bit. But he's old. He's attached to certainly projectably one of the worst. What we would assume to be one of the worst quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks. But of course, there's a pretty wide range of outcomes on Will Levis. I'm reasonably confident Will Levis isn't a guy that I want to be anchored to, at least not with a guy who I'm not convinced is still great, right? Like Devontae Adams, I'm pretty convinced is still great at football. I'm not convinced Calvin Ridley is great, has been great for multiple years now. He has Hopkins on the other side. The offense is super scary, and he goes at a price that I think is pretty rich. So I haven't dabbled in the Calvin Ridley waters.
Yeah, him and Hopkins are both just not really that interesting to me. I prefer both the Texas wide receivers, Worthy and Mitchell, and that's where you have to take them now. I mean, the Mitchell flame wars that are going to continue after the first round pick, because Mitchell's going to get drafted at the back end of the first round to a good team, and people like me who are pro Mitchell are going to be like, I told you nerds, he's awesome, he's going to be great, and then all the yards per route run people are going to be like, he's literally the worst, he stinks, he had 60 yards a game, he can't get open, he's got type 1 diabetes and it makes him cranky, for Bob McGinn's notebook. I mean, honestly, one, I don't care. Two, I think that one thing we're going to find as we continue to do this research is that market share stuff and yards per game and on yards for all that stuff is going to get, the NIL stuff is making it different, because all the best players are all playing on the best teams now. Like this guy no one's ever heard of, Jordan Whittingham, the third wide receiver, fourth target.
He's a 5-star recruit.
He's going to get drafted. I mean, this guy you've literally never heard of is going to be like a 6th-round pick to the Bills or something. Like, all the best players are at Texas, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia. Like, it's just kind of, it's so funny that Florida's in there considering they're terrible every year, but they always have all these great players. That's just how it's going to go. Like Georgia every single year is going to have like 5 guys on offense who get drafted. And it makes it harder to evaluate how many guys the last 3 years have we been like, oh, he was at Ohio State and transferred. Oh, he was at Georgia and he transferred. Oh, he was at Alabama and he transferred. Because they realize it's just hard to get on the field at these schools, you know? And then the other thing is going to be true, that there's going to be way more Devontae Walkers, where it's 4th-year guys who are amazing at their smaller school, than the guy who just spent the last 3 years gaining 180 yards a game at FCS is going to transfer to Alabama, and it's going to make it even harder for 18-year-olds to break out. We're going to see more four-year players and stuff. And I think loosely that is what's happening with both Worthy and Mitchell, where their presences with each other made each other so much worse, basically.
And Sanders and Whittingham and Bijan and Roshan and Jonathan Brooks
and
oh
this 18-year-old Baxter kid who's gonna end
what
up
was
being
it? CJ Baxter. Yeah. He was a five-star recruit too. Yeah, the talent is just insane. It's a totally fair point. I was also looking up the Georgia thing, like a Rosemee Jack Saint is probably gonna get drafted, and you know, talk about people nobody heard of. Like nobody, other than if you watch the college football playoff, nobody knows who that is. Nobody knows who Jordan Whittingham is, and these guys were big time, you know, prospects and all that, like high school prospects. But it's definitely gonna be super duper tough to kind of figure out those nuances, way tougher than it's ever been with the portal and with NIL. I still am personally leaning into, you know, but I'm open to being wildly wrong about that, right? Like, I'm open to the fact that AD Mitchell is just an absolute baller, and you know, it just didn't show up in the data. Like, the thing that is frustrating is, like, anyone with a brain can see both sides of the argument, right? It's the Achan thing that we talked about. Like, neither of us needed to say a word, and we understood the even though we were on opposite sides, we understood it. Like, you are an AD Mitchell person, and I understand why. You understood before you I even brought it up why I don't like him, because of what the metrics say, you know, like the performance metrics. And like, if I'm wrong, I understand it, because I can watch the film too. Like, I'm not a moron. I can flip on the film and see.
I mean, it's more likely I'm wrong. It's more likely that Mitchell is a bust, just because it's more likely that any wide receiver busts. Like, JSN had like as much of an unassailable profile as you can have, and he just like couldn't get on the field. Like, Kerr couldn't produce last year.
Mm-hmm. And it happens all the time. That's why. That's kind of why I believe the way that I do, and I flipped a little bit of some of my prospect stuff to so production driven, is because not because I think that that's like totally the absolute for sure right way to do it. It's just that everybody goes the opposite way, right? Like, there are every year there's so many AD Mitchells and Keon Coleman's and these types that is like, yeah, but they didn't do anything, and they're going to go in the first round, and everybody's going to take them highly in their dynasty drafts, and right, and they're going at a steep cost in best ball, relatively speaking, at least for AD Mitchell. And it's like, it's a little bit more exploitable to just be on the opposite end of those guys and look for Puka, right? It's like, I mean, Ladd, I guess, is a little more of the Puka, like a weird small sample of really high efficiency. It's not like he was Malik Washington, but Malik Washington was like Tank Dell.
Like, that's a good production style comp for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Small school guy, slot receiver, little, but just insanely, like absolutely insanely productive. And I believe this can be true about AD Mitchell. This can be true about Keon Coleman, but this can also be true right about the Tank Dells of the world. It's like, if you can play, you can play. We worry so fucking much and have for so long about like exactly how much you weigh, exactly how, you know, fast you run your 40, exactly what your yards per route run, and all. We worry so much about that. But the only thing that matters, if you can play, you can play. And Tank Dell can play, right? And some guys who didn't produce in college can play. And it's really, really, really hard to figure that out for us. But if you can find the spots where the market's wrong about those things, you can be, you like, that's where you can, right? The market was wrong about Kyren. The market was wrong about Puka Nacua. If you can find those, you win all the money. Like, you win all the money. So I'm not going to stop looking, but I just know I'm going to be wrong most of the time.
Correct. Let's end with this. Who is our best guess for the best round 18 pick in Best Ball Mania 5 right now?
Gosh. That is tough. Okay, I'm not going to say Malik Washington, because he might even be going higher than that now, but he once was somewhere around there, and that's cheating because I have talked about him way, way too much.
I'm going to guess it's one of the small school running backs who gets drafted by the Chiefs or the Cowboys. So Isaiah Davis, Kamani Vidal. I despite having a billion percent Laube, I don't think he's in that category, because I just think he's like going to be a pass catcher. But it'll be his
ceiling is like McKinnon, right? Like get in the right spot and be the Jerick McKinnon. So you catch eight balls, but you score two touchdowns or whatever, but he's never going to be Kyren.
Yeah. That is my, or one of the two UW wide receivers, Polk or McMillan, whichever one ends up getting to a better landing spot, a good team.
One spicy wide receiver take that we haven't mentioned that is a rookie that I really, really like. And I he isn't at the very top of my list, but also fits a little bit of your like transfer NIL thing. Transferred from Alabama to UCF, Javon Baker. I am
great,
a big,
great
big
example.
Fan. And he kind of fits almost both sides of this argument. Was pretty darn productive, like from a yards per out run, from a efficiency and all that kind of stuff, was better than, say, an AD Mitchell, but not like absolutely amazing. But the same thing, you pop on the tape, you watch this guy play football, you're like, oh, that's why he went to Alabama.
I was like at his career best game against Oklahoma. I think he had like 212 yards and two touchdowns. I was there.
I'm almost certain I stacked that game in DFS and played. They had another UCF had a bunch of transfers from big schools.
They did have another one. Kobe Hudson.
Yeah, he played the slot. And I played Kobe Hudson. And Javon Baker went for 45 fantasy points or whatever on OU. But I think that's like the discount AD Mitchell type guy to me is Javon Baker. Obviously, AD Mitchell went to Georgia and Texas, and Javon Baker transferred from Alabama to UCF. But I think he fits that mold. And then I'm cheating a little bit. Maybe I'll toss a couple names. It's a late round rookie running back, like you said, that nobody's expecting. We're all expecting Brooks, Benson, Corum, even like Estime, Braylon Allen. We're expecting all those, but it's going to be gross, right? Like you said, it's going to be Rasheen Ali or Dylan Johnson.
Dylan Johnson could come in and be amazing, like, because he caught so many passes at UW. It could be Dylan Johnson.
Dylan Johnson reeks of the running back that none of us can get excited for at all because he's a bad athlete. His production is bizarre and weird, but he was in a leech offense at Mississippi State, where he's a glorified wide receiver and pass protector running back position.
He was the one that Mike Leach didn't like. He was the
Correct.
One that Mike Leach was like, get out of here, son.
And the kid who stayed ended up being pretty darn good too. So it's possible he was just, behind a really good player, goes to UW. The starter got hurt there actually too, and he takes over. And but like, he pass protects, right? He catches the ball. He's big. He's strong. He does all this shit that NFL teams love. Like what we were talking, kind of to come full circle, he does all that stuff that NFL teams love, even though he's not a very good athlete. So I would put like someone like that, right? The Ali's and Vidal's are a little better athletes, but they catch passes and they pass protect. And Dylan Johnson's of the world, Cody Schrader's of the world, right? Like those guys are. It's going to be somebody like that.
Yes. Cody Schrader is, I mean, he's like 29 years old. So
yeah,
I guess he's the same age as Ray Davis, who I like as well.
I love Ray Davis. That's who I probably should have said is
the
Ray
Davis.
Davis
bet is the same thing as the Braylon Allen bet. He just like, he ends up being a round three pick to some team that's like, we're going to use you. And then we have no plans of paying you a second contract. Although Braylon Allen will be younger at the end of his first NFL contract than Ray Davis is right now, which is pretty funny.
Ray Davis is like your age, isn't he, Davis?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Ray Davis is an old man. All right, let's get out of here. Tell the people about Spike Week and how they can enhance their 2024 best ball season by using it.
Absolutely. So we started Spike Week many years ago now because we were playing, myself and a couple others were playing best ball and trying to break down the things Davis and I are breaking down here today. Our portfolio, how much we have of certain players. You can see the raw exposures in your draft app or whatever, Underdog app, DraftKings app, but you can't see anything about your teams. You can't see any like combinations of players you have. You can't see really any details. So it's not really all that helpful other than the exact percentages that you have. And then you can't see them live in real time while you're drafting. So we built some tools, one called the Draft Hacker, one called Draft IQ. Draft Hacker overlays onto your screen while you're drafting. We even built a mobile version for this season that you can use to see your exposures and like your player combination exposures while you're drafting. You can see the playoff schedules, correlations will highlight on the screen for you, right? So to Davis's point earlier about You have Stephon Diggs, CJ Stroud's going to pop off the screen for you. It makes drafting like really seamless, and you don't have to think so much while you're drafting with the tools that we built. And then you can understand the actual teams that you've drafted, which I found to be a pretty difficult chore. And then we've got, of course, all the same things like Davis has: rankings, content, you know, analysis, picks, all that stuff as well. But we are mostly powered by the tools that I think anybody drafting best ball teams over the summer will get a massive use out of.
All right, everyone, make sure to check out Spike Week, and I'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.